Hello, everybody, and welcome to Day 12 of the Everyday Novelist 2020 NaNoWriMo Write-Through, featuring your host, me, J. Daniel Sawyer, your other host...
Me, Kitty Nikian.
Had to remember your name, huh?
Uh-huh.
And our fantastic panel of writers. I need to really work on my alliteration because there's something there. There's something there. We have...
Sorry!
And...
Alexis.
And...
Gail Carriger. Hi.
Hello.
I hated the way I introduced myself. It was too happy. You. Hated that.
You're allowed to be happy, Tori.
I know.
Well, how's everybody doing today?
Pretty good.
Pretty positive.
Hey, good. It's amazing how we get on this waveform. We're all down one day, and then we're all doing good the next day. It's great. We're all synced up like a dormitory.
Today is my no school day.
Beautiful. That must have been relaxing.
It, more or less, yes.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
It's also my major homework day.
Awesome. Oh, your major homework day?
Federal holiday, isn't it?
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Today's Veterans Day.
Yep. I didn't have any students today. I was like, wait a minute. Actually, I got a I got nervous for a second. I was like, oh my gosh, did I not work today? No, it's good. It's a holiday.
Yeah, now that my dad's gone, I just don't notice those... military days anymore.
I do. My dad's military, so he always contacts me. Like, hey, how's it going? And I'm like, why are you contacting me? He's like,
Oh, man. How was your word count today, Tori?
I got not too much. I got about 700... Let me look.
Yeah, what's your total word count so far?
Let's see. So, I have 400, or, excuse me, 4,000. Mm-hmm. Let's not do that. 4,327.
4,327, which gives you 78 words.
Yeah, today was a bad day. Okay. I'm surprised I even showed up. But it's that kind of day, and that's good.
Hang out with you, and hanging out with you is always fun.
Yes, 4,327.
Okay, how about you, Kitty?
2,544.
252 words.
Okay, cool.
And how about you, Alexis?
My total is 4,286. And I wrote 730. I'm not sure where that puts me.
731. Very cool. 731.
That's weird.
That is now officially your second best day.
Yeah.
Yay.
Pretty good. How about you, Gail?
My total is 64637.
Oh, you win the day, 3,259.
Wow. Well, that's because I wrote less yesterday, and then I wrote more last night, so I split that over 2 days, technically. Yep. But the way we're doing it, it all counts for today. But yeah, yep. I picked it up and started writing, and then I did my work count, and I was like, okay. And then this didn't happen at 5, and I forgot that we weren't doing our earlier recording time. And so I was like, oh, well, what else am I going to do? So I just kept writing.
Yep, I did the same thing. I slogged through fucking treacle all last night. And all today, and it came up on normal recording time, and I was basically just done. I'm like, okay, it's Wednesday. Yes. I've got a couple extra hours. Well, let's see what I can do. And I actually made some progress, but it was the annoying kind of progress where I swallowed up notes. So my actual word count is lower than my net word count, which is what counts.
Right, because you were incorporating notes. I did some note incorporation too, but I also was like I knew I had like the big heartbreak conversation coming down the pipeline. And then I was just like He's basically got, like, three people he's sort of flirting with, and I basically just had, like, one after another come at him, and he had to just break every single one of their hearts. Comedically, and I lamplighted, like, the character lamplighted. He's, like, basically, like, what the hell did I do to offend the universe today? Like, literally, I have to just break up with another one. And he ends it, like, jumping off the cliff, which he could do because he can catch himself with magic. But it's like, it's sort of like, I'm so done with this day. It was so much fun to write.
Oh, that's really cute. Oh, that's fun.
Yeah,
I got my total, my cumulative now is 24,936. So my net word count today is 2107. So not awful, but not great. So.
Yeah, 2,000 words.
Hey, I beat Dan. I never beat Dan, so I'm going to rest on my laurels
for
today.
She beat the socks off me. Holy shit.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
It's all because of heartbreak, you guys. It's just heartbreak. Like, it's so much fun to, like, freaking destroy my characters.
Well, I am set up to maybe do that tomorrow because I just, the first dead body just showed up.
Uh-oh. Yes.
And things dead are about to kick into high gear.
Yeah, it was really fun for me because he has to, like, my main character has to break up with these three different characters pretty much in the same way for the same reason. And but each character reacts completely differently, and so it was kind of like writing a character study to be like, okay, how does this one react to having their heart broken? Well, that's interesting. Now how does this one? And like, it was one of those things that it was happening through me, right? Like I wasn't really controlling it. I was just like, now I know these characters well enough since I'm near the end of the book where I'm like, oh yeah, that character is just gonna react completely differently. It was so much fun.
It's like the romance version of the last act of Clue.
Yes, totally. That's totally what it's like. Because he's already, like, depressed. And then when the first one happens, he's, like, tries to be really sensitive and sweet about the whole situation. And then the second one, and he's just like, okay. And then the third one, and he's like, I have no fucks left to give. So it was really funny. But yeah, it was totally the romantic version of that.
Nice. I just had amazing deja vu with that whole conversation. That's so funny. Like, I've heard this before. Have we gone over this? That was funny.
I don't think so.
It's territory.
It's like, oh my gosh, I have deja vu.
I just wrote it. I swear I just wrote it.
I love it.
I actually have some topic questions.
Yeah.
Like,
the answer is cheese.
I'm struggling with writing goals for my secondary characters. They're a bit too passive to have clear goals. Just how I've been imagining them. And I'm not sure what to do about that.
Well, like as in what your characters want out of things and stuff?
Yeah, because, like, otherwise they're just doing nothing. And that makes for kind of a boring character. So I'm writing kind of a Mrs. Hudson character.
Like from Sherlock Holmes.
Like, usefully plot-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And coming to think of it, I don't actually know what her goals were.
Oh, she was the landlady, and so she wanted a quiet, orderly house, and she didn't approve of all of the crap that Sherlock kept
bringing into it.
All right.
She also was nosy and wanted to know why he was bringing all of that crap into her house. And so she's also interested in the thing that is annoying her, which is a fun, which is a fun character trait to write.
All right, I can work with something like that. Also, the pace is going too fast in a really bad way. Like, I don't know how to make the scenes useful without going through days in a really awkward pace.
Are your characters encountering obstructions?
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
You may be hitting plot points, but your characters aren't having to suffer for them.
Oh boy.
And you can also
I just feel like
you can obstruct outside of plot to slow time, like set the neighborhood on fire or a storm or a major accident that like a boating accident down at the docks that everybody runs to like check out or something like that. So you can,
which would be very, very appropriate for a story set in ancient Greece too, because Greek drama is full of the acts of the gods fucking with mortals.
It's true.
Okay.
All right. You can even have a religious festival.
You can throw essentially what amounts to an obstacle at all of your characters if you need a temporal slowdown.
All right.
That's another option. That's it's helpful. Also fun to, like, see your characters react to something that's outside of entirely outside of their control.
Does that help with the pacing issue?
Yeah, it does a lot. Okay, cool. I completely... The thing is, I did it last section, and I felt like it was too slice of life-ish or something. I'm not sure.
So you're looking for a happy median. You did it too slow in one part and too fast in the other, and you're looking to find that middle ground so you can push and pull as you go.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
All right.
Kitty, how was writing for you today?
I actually wrote.
Yay!
I'm making some progress in story development, and I'm actually mostly outlining in better detail now.
Hmm.
Like, it's like, oh, I know exactly what needs to happen now.
So you're figuring out how to lay track?
Yeah.
Nice.
And how so about you don't want to stop building the story that you're working on, because you said that you were ready to just let it go.
Yeah, what ended up being the problem was that the beginning didn't set up the story that I wanted to run with, and so I had to relay out the beginning and how the characters first come together, and changing that made the rest of the story flow.
Nice.
Cool.
Good.
How about you, Tori? It was a short day, but how's your story doing for you?
It was a short day, but I'm feeling better about it. I was not feeling good for a moment, and I think just falling back into my what I know and archaeology and stuff like that, it made me, okay, it brought together so many different ideas that I could use, and I was very excited.
Excellent. I am just so pleased at having had a dead body finally show up.
Finally!
Yeah, no, the dead body and the blackmail has started, too.
Excellent.
So, yeah, after all that setup, I'm finally getting to the meat of the issue. In this case, the rotting meat of the
dead
issue.
Dead meat!
But, you know. Rotting already?
Well, the first murder doesn't happen on the ship. It happens back on Earth, but it triggers the cascade of murders on the ship. So.
Ooh, I'm curious.
This is exciting.
That's confusing.
Dan, do you want to tackle the question from the forum really quick before?
I do, but I wanted to tell you about the conceit for this story. Ooh. I'm starting to have a lot of fun with. The conceit, of course, is that it's a revisionist history that recasting what is commonly known about the first Mars mission based on recently declassified documentation.
Oh.
And so I get to, every once in a while, when I get stuck in just the right way, I get to break in with the historian's voice and comment and do world building on the state of the world in the historian's time at the same time.
Oh, I love that. That's what a good conceit. I love it. That's fun.
Yes, yeah, so we do have a question from the forum today.
Woohoo!
It is from Kelsifer. Great handle, actually.
Is it spelled with a C or a
Kelsifer.
K? Kelsifer.
K.
Okay.
Is it spelled with an A?
No. Hal's Moving Castle?
That's with a C in the book, but I wonder if that's what it's alluding to.
It could
the
be.
The Fire Demon.
Yes!
K-E-L-S-I-F-E-R. Kelsifer.
No, it's spelled completely differently, but still.
So Kelsifer says, "Hello! I was wondering if anyone has any tips on world building. I feel very good about my characters' dialogue and descriptions, but I'm not sure I'm doing well with making the reader feel oriented in the world where all of this is happening."
Well, I'm right there with you.
"Are there any tricks or strategies you use for this? Do you go back and add exposition about the world later? Do you ever get so wrapped up in the details of how your world works that it starts to feel overwhelming?"
Yes. I'll take that one first because I'm fond of saying that if you spend too much time world building, you're a dungeon master, you're not a writer. But that's what it is. I advise backing off on the world. Although, you know, there are certain genres and oeuvres like epic fantasy, for example, where people read for a lot of world building. It's just not.
And it's largely the fault of the dungeon masters, too.
I do have some tricks and thoughts, and I'm sure Dan does as well. But one of the things I like to do, if it fits organically into your world, is to give your characters a thing, an object or a piece of clothing or a piece of jewelry or a character trait of some kind that is endemic to your world. So if you're writing something set in a historical time period, for example, you can give them a piece of jewelry like a diadem, which is entirely indicative of, say, the 1920s, right? And that when you mention it or you give that character that thing to put on or you have it ripped off in a fight scene or something like that, it regrounds your readers in the time and space that you're writing without being a break in the storytelling structure. So, for example, my character Alexia carries a parasol with her at all times. That's something that's a ubiquitous thing for women in the Victorian era. In her case, it's like she's steampunk, so she's Swiss Army knifed it, so it's a weapon and it does all of these different things. My spy character carries a bladed fan. Again, a Victorian item that has been tweaked in a steampunky way. So every time either of those characters whip out those items, it reminds my readers that it's the Victorian era and that it's and that it's a steampunk version of the Victorian era.
A lot of the best world building, really, even in epic fantasy, a lot of the best world building comes in the form of the everyday stuff that implies things about the world, whether it's the old science fiction saw, The Door Dilated.
Yes.
Quite frequently in the 40s and 50s, there were science fiction stories where the only obvious world building was The Door Dilated. And everything else was just revealed subtly through conversation and changed social attitudes and things
like
that. It's
like the swish noise on the deck of Star Trek, right? The swish of, the doors of the future make a different noise. So think about that as part of it. Like, the items of the future. If you're writing ancient Greece and you're using, like, a ton of pottery and people are, like, sinking pots, you have sand floors, right? So you don't put a pot on a table, you sink a pot into a floor. The act of like putting down
a pot.
That's
why the amphorae always had those pointy bottoms, right?
So the act of putting down a piece of pottery is different when you're in a different place in time. And so, like, I'm writing a book right now that has everybody living in mobile friendly, so everyone's in tents. So you're not drinking from cups and glasses, you're drinking from like canteens, or you're drinking from flasks, you're drinking from portable items. Nobody opens a door. Everybody opens a flap and sticks their head in, right? People can overhear conversations all the time. Like, all of this aspect of setting is influencing your characters and how they interact.
I've got to drop out.
Okay, go for it. Bye, Alexis. We'll see you tomorrow, Alexis.
Thank you very much. Bye. Have a good night.
You too.
Where your characters sit is at the point that the mice sit in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Mm. They're the protuberances into our universe of vast, hyper-intelligent, pan-dimensional beings.